I've entitled today's message, Weakness Made Strong. Weakness Made Strong. I'm sure that we all, from time to time, struggle with personal feelings of inadequacy, inadequacies that relate to our gifts, our abilities, maybe feeling limited in our resources, our finances. And perhaps sometimes those feelings of inadequacy are heightened when someone who perhaps particularly doesn't like us wants to point them out. You know, it's one thing for us to feel that about ourselves, but when someone else takes it upon them as their mission to highlight what we think are our inadequacies, that particularly is hurtful and strikes home. That's what we find exactly happening with Apostle Paul here. There's this battle going on between he and what he calls the false apostles who've come into the church at Corinth. The nature of the battle that's happening here is that these false apostles were comparing themselves to Paul and saying that he was weak while they were strong. I remember back in chapter 10, verse 12, Paul says, "We dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves. But they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise." So the nature of this battle is the false apostles are doing this comparing and measuring with Paul, the purpose being they want to highlight their strengths versus what they're saying is Paul's weaknesses. Paul recognized the foolishness of this comparison, this game they're playing of comparing and measuring. But he also realized that many of the Corinthian believers would not see the foolishness of this battle, this game of comparing and measuring. Look at chapter 11, verses 18 and 19. Paul says, "Seeing that many boast according to the flesh, I also will boast. For you put up with fools gladly." That's a reference here to the false apostles. He says, they're being foolish in this, but you're putting up with it. You're listening to them. Since you yourselves are wise. A little bit of tongue-in-cheek sarcasm there. In Paul's effort to thwart the false apostles' attempts to undermine him in the eyes of the Corinthian believers, undermine his authority as an apostle, and undermine his influence upon the Corinthians, Paul is drawn into and compelled to boast in the same manner as the false apostles are boasting. In our passage this morning, look at verse 11, chapter 12, verse 11. He says, "I have become a fool in boasting. You have compelled me." So he's sort of been drawn into the game that these apostles, false apostles, are playing in this comparing and measuring. And in particularly chapter 11, you see a bit of that comparison going on. Verse 22, "Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I." So he's drawn into this battle of comparing and measuring, even though he acknowledges it's foolish. It's foolish. His purpose is he doesn't want the Corinthian believers to think of him as weak. And therein, all of us feel that. When we're perhaps feel at odds with someone, we're in this battle. When we're in a battle, we want to think we're battling from a position of strength, from the upper hand, the high ground, if you will. And Paul's that same way. But here in chapter 12, verse 9, we see the Lord speaks to Paul in verse 9. He says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness." Paul hears that word from the Lord, and we then see a dramatic change in Paul's attitude and thinking. Afterward, he says, "Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities." In the next verse there, he says, "Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities and reproaches and needs and persecutions and distresses for Christ's sake." So there's a radical transformation in his thinking, in his feelings, as well as in his actions. And we're going to look at how does that take place. So while we all perhaps struggle with what we consider our weaknesses or what others say are our weaknesses, our feelings of inadequacy, other people's insults of our person or performance, etc., let's this morning see what can we learn from Paul's example that will help us to turn our weaknesses into God's strength. Turning our weaknesses into God's strength. So we're first of all going to look at the weaknesses that they're highlighting, and then we're going to look at God's strength. How is it turned into God's strength? There's a couple of things that we need to see and that we can learn from the life of the Apostle Paul here. First of all, God's servant, and our context here, it's Paul. God's servant has a true assessment of his strengths and weaknesses. I look at chapter 11, verses 5 and 6. Paul says, "For I consider that I am not at all inferior to the most eminent apostles. Even though I am untrained in speech, yet I am not in knowledge, but we have been thoroughly manifested among you in all things." Paul had a true assessment of his strengths and his weaknesses. Look at chapter 12, verses 11 and 12. "I have become a fool in boasting. You have compelled me. For I ought to have been commended by you, for in nothing was I behind the most eminent apostles, though I am nothing. Truly the signs of an apostle were accomplished among you with all perseverance, in signs and wonders and mighty deeds." Now Paul realized that anyone willing to objectively look at his qualifications as compared to those of the false apostles would come to the conclusion that he was superior. He's saying anybody that will look at this objectively, who they are versus who I am, their qualifications, their experience, my experience, he said they would be led to the conclusion, if they're willing to look at this objectively, that I am superior. He emphasizes this. Look at chapter 12. Chapter 11, verses 22 and 23. He says, "Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more." Now notice the more. "In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prison more frequently, and deaths often." He says, now, if you're looking at a comparison here, he said, I'm more than they are, if you're willing to look at this objectively. So he had a true assessment of his strengths and weaknesses. In addition, Paul was not intimidated by what others were saying of him, nor by how those who opposed him viewed his qualifications or their assessment of his ministry. Look at chapter 13. They were trying to say, Paul's weaker, he's disqualified, we're qualified. Listen to us. Chapter 13, verse 6. He says, "But I trust that you will know that we are not disqualified. Now I pray to God that you do no evil, not that we should appear approved, but that you should do what is honorable, though we may seem disqualified. For we can do nothing against the truth, but for the truth. For we are glad when we are weak and you are strong. And this also we pray, that you may be made complete. Paul says, look, my objective here is your growth and edification. He says, it doesn't worry me what the false apostles are saying about me, what they think about me. If they think I'm disqualified, that doesn't bother me. He says, my main concern is your welfare. And that's my major concern. So he wasn't intimidated by what others were saying about him or how they viewed his qualifications or the assessment of his ministry. So he had a true assessment of his strengths. The second thing we see here, God's servant is careful in the use of his strengths. Paul knew he had strength. In this battle, in this warfare, going back to chapter 10, verse 4, Paul said, the weapons of our warfare, and it's a warfare with these false apostles, he says, the weapons of our warfare are mighty in God for pulling down strongholds. He says, we're not weak in this battle. Later on, he says, God is mighty toward you. So while he realized that he had these strengths, he had these weapons that were mighty in God, he was careful in the use of the strengths that he knew he had. One of these, we see that he was careful in the use of his God-given authority. Look at chapter 10, verses 8 to 11. He says, for even if I should boast somewhat more about our authority, which the Lord gave us for edification and not for your destruction, I shall not be ashamed, lest I seem to terrify you by letters. For his letters, they say, are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech contemptible. Let such a person consider this, that what we are in word by letters when we are absent, such will we also be indeed when we are present. Paul says, I have God-given authority, and you fall within the realm of that authority. But he says, I also realize this God-given authority is for, he says, verse 8, for your edification, not for your destruction. So he says, while I have this strength, he says, that strength has to be used. It has to be utilized in the appropriate, the God-given venue, way it should be used. I look at chapter 13, verse 10. He says a similar thing. He says, therefore I write these things being absent, lest being present I should use sharpness, according to the authority which the Lord has given me for edification and not for destruction. So he was careful in the use of his God-given authority. He was careful in how he administered that authority in the lives of individuals. We won't take time, but you can turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verses 14 and verses 18 to 21. He speaks to them as a father, warning his child. He wasn't an abusive father, but he carefully utilized that authority as a spiritual father in warning and looking after his children. Here in 2 Corinthians, look at chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. Here we see Paul's desire with his authority, with his strength, his desire to be gentle as opposed to being boldly confident. He says, now I, Paul, myself, am pleading with you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in presence am lowly among you, but being absent am bold toward you. But I beg you that when I am present, I may not be bold with that confidence by which I intend to be bold against some who think of us as if we walked according to the flesh. So he's saying, I'd rather be gentle towards you. Earlier in Corinthians, he said, which would you rather I come to you? With a sword or in a spirit of gentleness? And here he's saying, I'd rather come in a spirit of gentleness. But we see that when gentleness fails, then he does come in boldness. Look at chapter 13 here in 2 Corinthians. And notice the boldness. He says, this will be the third time I am come to you. By the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word shall be established. I have told you before and foretell as if I were present the second time. And now being absent, I write to those who have sinned before and to all the rest that if I come again, I will not spare. So he's like, when my approach is desirous to be gentle and appealing to you to repent of the sin, and he said, those of you that aren't repenting of the sin, he said, when I come, I'm going to be bold. I'm not going to spare. But you see the carefulness in which he was administering the authority. A third thing we can see here, God's servant, and here in our context, it's Paul. God's servant can be hurt when those whom he is serving fail to recognize and appreciate his strengths. They fail to acknowledge and recognize and appreciate his strengths. Here in chapter 12, verse 11, he says, I have become a fool in boasting. You have compelled me, for I ought to have been commended by you. He says, I ought to have been commended by you. And Paul was hurt by the fact that the Corinthians showed little acknowledgement and appreciation of his qualifications as an apostle, as well as little appreciation of all the sacrifice and the suffering he was going through in order to minister to them. And he says later in the passage we read this morning, verse 15, he says, I will very gladly spend and be spent for your souls. In that statement, he's saying, you have no idea what I've gone through. The attacks, the having to work to provide for my own needs when you should have been doing that. All I've done and able to minister to you. And though the more abundantly I love you, the less I am loved. You can sense the hurt. The hurt. You know, we all want to be loved and appreciated. We like to be complimented on our achievements. We like for our hard work to be recognized and the sacrifices we have made appreciated. That's a natural desire for all of us. Paul's expressing that natural desire, and he's saying, I'm not getting that from you. I should have been commended by you when you, if you would reflect upon all that I've done. Remember, he spent 18 months, scholars say, in his initial visit. He's saying, now I'm coming up on the third visit to this church. Scholars say this 2 Corinthians is the fourth letter he has written to them. He's invested a lot of sacrifice and time and ministry to these people, and yet he's saying, you don't show any appreciation for that. You're not showing any appreciation for that. Now, Paul acknowledged the fact that the false apostles were commending themselves. Their self-commendation was an attempt to increase the Corinthians' appreciation of their qualifications and at the same time decrease their appreciation of Paul's qualifications. Isn't that often the way it is? The way some people exalt themselves is by putting others down. You know, criticize and put someone else down so you can feel better and more important. And that's exactly what's happening here between Paul and these false apostles. You know, none of us like to be put down by someone else when we know that their sole intent is to exalt themselves. None of us appreciate or like that. And that's what Paul is feeling here as an apostle with this church. A fourth thing we can see here is God's servant can be tempted to fight with the same fleshly weapons as those being used by his adversaries. You know, the battle again here is the false apostles are comparing and measuring themselves, and they're saying, you know, look at Paul, his bodily presence is weak and his speech is contemptible, but look at us, you know, we're mighty, we're strong in presence, and we're eloquent in our oratory, and see, we're much better and more qualified than Paul, so listen to us. And Paul is drawn into that comparative warfare. We looked at it in chapter 11, verses 22 to verse 28. Particularly, you see a bit of that comparison. He says, they're saying this. And he says, I'm more. And he's pulled into that battle. You know, when we're involved in warfare, we all want the high ground, the upper hand. You know, if we have to fight, we'd rather fight from what is perceived as a position of strength. Paul say, if I'm going to fight these false apostles, it'd be nice to be able to fight from a position of strength in you Corinthians' eyes. To see that, see, as far as qualifications, experience, and wisdom, I'm far, far and above these false apostles. But he's pulled into this. That's why he says in chapter 12, verse 11, he says, I have become a fool in boasting, you have compelled me. Verse 6, he says, for though I might desire to boast, I will not be a fool. So it's like in this battle, the false apostles have sort of pulled Paul down and into their game of this measuring and comparing in his attempt to try to get the Corinthians' attention that they would listen to him. But Paul acknowledges that this is foolishness. Chapter 10, verse 12, he said, you know, there where he outlines what they're doing, he ends it, they're not wise. This is not a wise strategy. This is not a wise game and battle that they're playing. Chapter 11, verse 16 to 18. He says, I say again, let no one think me as a fool. If otherwise, at least receive me as a fool that I may boast a little. So he's pulled into this comparing and boasting. He says, what I speak not according to the Lord, but as it were foolishly in this confidence of boasting, seeing that many boast according to the flesh, I also will boast. So while he sees the foolishness of it, he's also feeling being compelled, pulled into that comparing and boasting. He says this boasting is according to the flesh, he says here. In our chapter this morning, verse 1, he says, it is doubtless not profitable for me to boast. So he's not only saying it's foolish, he's saying it's not profitable, this comparing and measuring and boasting. So you get a sense of this battle that's happening between Paul and the false apostles. Let's look now at the variety of weaknesses that Paul's would have felt and sensitivity to, particularly in light of the fact that these are the ones that the false apostles are highlighting. Look at chapter 12, verse 10. He says, therefore I take pleasure, and then he enumerates five different things here. He says, first of all, in infirmities. The word has the idea of incapacity, weakness, or limitation. Paul says, and this is the general word that he uses right throughout this portion. You see the same word in chapter 11, verse 30. For if I must boast, I will boast in the things which concern my infirmity. That's in chapter 12, verse 5. Of such a one I will boast, yet of myself I will not boast, except in my infirmities. So it's this general word that has the idea of incapacity or limitation. Ever feel like when you look at your own abilities, your own resources, and your desire to serve the Lord, and yet you feel like, boy, I just feel really limited. I just feel inadequate. And Paul's saying, and we're going to see, he says, I take pleasure in that. You think, how do you do that? We're going to come to that in just a moment. But it's the idea of inadequate, limited. Then he goes on. He says, I take pleasure in reproaches. In reproaches. Literally in insults. Insults. It's the idea of insolent maltreatment. Paul uses the same word in 1 Thessalonians 2:2 when he says, we were spitefully treated at Philippi. Now what happened at Philippi? They were arrested, beaten, thrown in prison, and put in the stocks. And you remember the story, the earthquake at midnight, and they're freed. And then the authorities come to them afterwards when they find out that they were Roman citizens and they had beaten them without any trial. Ooh, big mistake on the part of the officials. And they were like, oh, you know, hurry, quick, slip out of town before this gets known what happened. And Paul says, no, no, you come and you take us out of the prison. You've very instantly maltreated us. We're not just going to slip out of town and hide the fact what you did. He said, we were instantly insulted and maltreated. In this battle that's happening between Paul and the false apostles, the accusations they're making against him, the insults against him, as a result, perhaps, the responses toward Paul by the Corinthians based on what the false apostles were saying about him. The insolent maltreatment. Then he says, I take pleasure in calamities. Calamities. The idea of the word here is inevitable trouble. Inevitable trouble. And some of the things we go through in life, life has its inevitable troubles. I think perhaps Paul, and sometimes I can relate to what he's saying about it. He could have been thinking, you know, if I just did everything right as an apostle, if I just had the perfect ministry, then we wouldn't have any upsets. We wouldn't have anybody get upset and leave the church and people get at odds with each other. No, he says there are inevitable troubles. Inevitable troubles. Listen at Matthew 18, verse 7, the Lord Jesus' words. He says, woe to the world because of offenses. Ideas, occasions of stumbling. He says, for offenses must come. But woe to that man by whom the offense comes. He says there are going to be occasions that people stumble and fall. And they must and they will come. It's an inevitable trouble. He actually uses this same word in the parallel passage in Luke 17:1. It says, then he said to the disciples, it is impossible that no offenses should come. But woe to him through whom they do come. He says, it's impossible that no offenses will ever happen. That's an impossibility. So I think sometimes we're tempted to think, you know, if I just did everything right, then no one would get upset. Everything would go smoothly. There'd never be any problems. And he says, no, in this life, there's going to be inevitable trouble. Inevitable trouble. But Paul says that's one of the weaknesses. Then he says persecutions. The word here has the idea of to systematically organize a program to oppress and harass people. Now, that's what was happening at Corinth. These false apostles had a systematic, organized program to attack Paul, harass him, to try to create in the Corinthians' mind that he was disqualified, he was weak, don't listen to him, listen to us. There was a systematic persecution. Paul uses this same word in Romans 8:35. He says, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword? And he answers, nothing is able to separate us from the love of Christ. It's interesting because that Romans 8 passage uses several of these same words that are listed here in 2 Corinthians 12:10. And finally, the fifth one, distresses. The word here has the idea to be under severe limitations or restrictions. Severe limitations or restrictions. He'd used this same word earlier in this epistle. Turn back to chapter 6. And this perhaps is the restriction, the limitation that he has in mind. In chapter 6, verse 11, he says, O Corinthians, we have spoken openly to you. Our heart is wide open. You are not restricted by us, but you are restricted by your own affections. You know, I think the restriction, the limitation Paul is speaking of here, he's saying, one of the restrictions, the weaknesses I'm feeling is the restriction in your affections to me. We've all perhaps at some point felt that. Someone we love dearly, yet that person, through some misunderstanding, something, changes their spirit, their attitude, their love toward us. They've restricted, they've pulled back, they've limited the affection they used to show to us but no longer do. And Paul says, yeah, I feel that weakness. I feel that weakness. So those are some of the weaknesses, I think, that Paul is feeling. But then we see a change. He at first is in this battle of comparing and measuring and trying to overpower the false apostles by showing he's better than they are. And now we see this change. He says, actually, in all those things they're pointing out, all those things I feel as inadequacies, as restrictions, as persecution, as insolent maltreatment, he says, all those things I feel, he said, actually, I can boast. I can be happy. I can be glad in those things. You know, wow, what changed in this guy? What changed in Paul that this could happen? Well, the change takes place here in verse 9. When the Lord speaks, he says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. And then the next verse, Paul says, when I am weak, and we've looked at all the weaknesses that he felt, when I am weak, then I am strong. So how did this change take place? First of all, we see a change in Paul's thinking. There was a change in his mind, a change, if you will, in his faith. In his faith. Now here in the statement, in verse 9, God gives Paul two statements or promises of truth for him to believe. He says, first of all, my grace is sufficient for you. A truth, a promise. Promise two, my strength is made perfect in weakness. So God speaks and he says, here's the truth. Here's my promise to you, Paul. My grace is sufficient. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Now Paul has the opportunity to believe, to place his faith in the statements, the truth, the promises of God. Romans 10:17 says, so then faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. God has given Paul the word here. Now it's Paul's opportunity to take hold of those in faith, to believe them. So that's step number one. A change in his thinking, in his faith, in his belief, a change in his mind. That's then followed by a change in his feelings, a change in his emotions. Look at it here, chapter 12, verse 9. He says, therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities. Verse 10. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities. Now that's a drastic change in how he feels about these infirmities. And before, he was being compelled into trying to say, now I'm better. They're pointing out all these what they think are weaknesses. But now there's a change in how he thinks about this, how he feels about this. You know, there's a truth here. Our emotions follow the path of our thinking. Our emotions follow the path of our thinking. Now, you can't maintain the emotion of hatred without thinking angry thoughts about that person. You can't maintain the emotion of love without thinking loving thoughts about another person. Your emotions follow or trail along your thinking. So if you want to correct your emotions, you need to correct your thinking. And God has given Paul truth. He's saying, here's where your faith, your belief, your thinking needs to be. And if you'll have that faith, if you'll think this way, my grace is sufficient, my strength is made perfect in weakness, then your emotions will get in line with that, if you'll believe it. You see, Paul's thinking and faith changed concerning his weaknesses, his infirmities. And when he came to the point that he by faith could accept the truth of God's statements, then and only then could he say, most gladly I will boast in these infirmities. I will take pleasure in these infirmities. So his emotions followed as he got his faith, his belief, his thinking in line with the truth of the Word of God. Therein is the key. Now Peter says a similar thing. Look at 1 Peter chapter 4. First Peter chapter 4, verse 12. He says, beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. He's saying, I know this is a fiery trial you're going through, but if you'll grab hold of the truth that the Lord's coming back, and when his glory is revealed, he said, you're going to be glad, you're going to rejoice. Verse 14, if you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. On their part he is blasphemed, but on your part he is glorified. So it was a change in Paul's faith, his thinking. When his thinking changed, his emotions followed suit such that he could say, most gladly, and I will take pleasure. And then we see a change in his actions and his outward responses. And this is a change in his will. So it affects his mind, his emotions, and now his will, how he responds, how he reacts. He says in verse 6, though I might desire to boast, and certainly there was that compelling to want to be pulled into this battle of comparing and measuring. He says, though I might want to do that, I will not be a fool, for I will speak the truth, but I refrain, lest anyone should think of me above what he sees me to be or hears from me. He says, I refrain. Now think about what's happening here in chapter 12. And I was just reflecting, think about this morning while I was getting ready for church. You know, we often read in verse 12 when we read this about Paul's visions and revelations and being called up into the third heaven, and he's not sure whether he was in the body or out of the body. And I think this is a reference to Paul because in verse 7 he says, lest I should be exalted above measure. So I think this is his own personal experience. But think now in this battle that's happening between Paul and the false apostles, and he felt compelled comparing himself, you know, fighting on their plane of this comparison and measuring. And he comes to chapter 12 and he says, let me tell you about experience I had. You know, these false apostles, and in Greek culture, you know, wisdom and experience, that was, you know, the supreme thing. He says, let me tell you about experience I had. He says, I was caught up in the paradise. He says, I heard inexpressible words which is not lawful for a man to utter. You know, it'd be like Paul's in this battle. It's almost like if you were playing a card game. And the card game is the false apostles game of this comparing and measuring. And he says, I've got a trump card that trumps anything they could ever boast about. None of these false apostles could even come close to what I experienced. But you see the change in his actions. He doesn't play the card. Now he has some help because he says a messenger of Satan was given to buffet me. But he said, I refrained. I can't talk about that. You know, there's a real change. You know, if you're in this battle where someone's putting you down, and in their game, you know, they're comparing and trying to show they're better than you, and you're holding a trump card that would blow them away and totally set them right, that you're far better. He says, this kind of thing would exalt me above measure, he says. This would end the game with them. But he says, I refrain. He says, I'm not allowed to talk about that. I can't talk about that, and I won't. I refrain. There's a change. Yeah, I don't know about you, but when you're pulled into that kind of battle and fight and everything, and you think, oh boy, I've got the winning play here that will shut them up forever. And you say, no, I'm not going to play it. I'm not going to do it. That wouldn't honor the Lord. You see, part of the purpose in all this, Paul says, in this game of commending and measuring and comparing, he says back in chapter 10, the last verse 18, he says there, not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends. Paul says, I'm leaving my case with the Lord, because the one whom he commends. You know, I think he realized, even if he had played that card of his experience being caught up into paradise and these visions and revelations, when you're battling with fleshly people on their terms, you never win. You know, I've sat and debated with people and with superb logic backed them into a corner that showed they were wrong, and they changed the whole terms of the game. I did this once with a Jehovah's Witness. I can remember I was right out of seminary and feeling very proud. You know, you'd learned all these arguments. And so with this Jehovah's Witness, because one of their key passages back in Exodus and Moses at the burning bush, I am that I am. And so we went there and that's Yahweh, that's Jehovah. This Jehovah's Witness said to me, I said, oh, okay, good, right, that's great. So let's go to the New Testament. And we went to John chapter 8, and Jesus said the very words of Exodus, I am that I am. So I said, Jesus is actually claiming to be the I am of the Yahweh at the burning bush in Exodus chapter 3. And you know what happened? That Jehovah's Witness looked at me and said, oh no, that wasn't... He had already admitted it was Yahweh. And then he turned around and said, oh no, that was an angel. It wasn't Yahweh. And I learned very quickly, you can't beat them at their own game. And that's what Paul is doing here. He's saying, it's pointless to enter into this game of commending and comparison and measuring. He says, I'm confident I'm far more qualified than these false apostles, and I could prove it. I could pull this trump card of the visions and revelations and prove that I'm far more than they are. But he said, that wouldn't do it. That wouldn't do it. And so you see a real change. Another thing I think we see here, this change in Paul's thinking and his emotions and his actions didn't happen suddenly. Paul struggled with the weaknesses and infirmities, particularly this messenger of Satan, this thorn in the flesh, which he says he pleaded with the Lord three times. So this change in Paul's thinking, his feelings, and his action, it didn't happen overnight. It wasn't, okay, yeah, got this, boom. It says, no, he pleaded three times. Remove this weakness. Remove this thorn in the flesh. I'm feeling all these weaknesses. There was a battle. There was a struggle. There was a pleading. And so the change for us might not happen quickly or immediately, but it will happen if we will persevere in reminding ourselves of the truth and committing ourselves to believing. I think Paul had to go back and remind himself of the truth, what God said. My grace is sufficient. My strength is made perfect in your weakness. And remind himself again and again and again. If we'll do that, our emotions will then follow our faith. You know, there's the right order. Your faith grabs hold of the truth and then your emotions follow. Unfortunately, you know what many people do? They let their emotions interpret the truth. And they end up believing something that's not interpreted because their emotions have interpreted incorrectly. You know, how many times can you take the Bible and you open it to a clear statement from the Bible, and the person says, well, I can't imagine that's what it means. I can't imagine a loving God would really say that. Well, that's what it says! You know, your emotions can misinterpret. You got to take it at face value. God said it. You know, Paul could have, in his emotions, said, well, you know, I don't feel like your grace is sufficient. Well, God said, it is! It is sufficient! I believe that! So we get it back to front. You got to take the truth and believe it. Then your emotions will follow. Your emotions will follow. They follow our faith. And then we're equipped to respond with appropriate actions. So some good truth this morning. Are you feeling inadequate? Particularly if someone's making it their mission to point it out. Then God says, my grace is sufficient and my strength is perfected in your weaknesses. If our faith will grab hold of that and then allow our emotions to follow, then we will be equipped to respond appropriately. Let's bow in prayer as we close.